You're listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental.
TMZ, oh my goodness.
I mean, what are we doing here?
I think he's the philosopher of football.
It's great that everyone can give their opinion.
Absolutely ridiculous.
Find me. Find me. I don't care anymore. So drain my bank account.
Everybody up here, every single day, goes into the office, into the laboratory, to try to cook up some great stuff for you guys.
That's why he's here!
Oh, from New York, New York, you are listening to Extra Time, driven by Continental from the AT&T MLS Studios in Midtown Manhattan. I am Andrew Wiebe with my partners in soccer, Matt Doyle, Kaylin Carr, Charlie Davies. It's a little bit of an experimental 11 here, guys. But I think we got something. I think there's chemistry that's been built over time. The partnerships have been good. Now it's time to execute it on the field. So do me proud. Do your manager proud.
We have no midfield. It's just two strikers and center back and Doyle.
But he
should be determined.
He's always resisted this. He's always resisted pigeonholing himself.
I'm clearly Pirlo. I just sit. I just sit and spray, guys.
Yeah,
that's it.
No, the wine drinking. Yeah.
Raquel May to me, to be honest.
I'm fine with that.
More stationary. Hey,
that's a compliment.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
Uh-huh. A compliment. There are some.
He's been compared to Pep before.
I have. I've been compared to Pep. I'm budget Pep Guardiola.
Yep. We'll see if you can get through 60 minutes here. Your fitness obviously is questionable.
Very low.
Yeah, we got a big show coming up for you. No guests, just the four of us wrapping today. MLS Week 17. The San Jose Earthquakes stole the show, Cali Classico, at Stanford Stadium. It was not complete until Shea Salinas whipped off his shirt, spun it around. Zlatan was entertaining before the game. He wasn't nearly as entertaining during the game. We're talking Gold Cup as well. I got a little bit of a rant because anybody who says that the Gold Cup is a disaster and a waste of time, and all due respect to you, Steve Nichol, ESPN FC, I'm going to have some words for you later on in this show. You're just wrong. You're wrong. And maybe Doyle will try to guide me back to to a different side. Maybe I'll try to.
I think you're mostly right. I think you're mostly right, and Steve Nichol's mostly wrong.
Keep that energy.
Okay.
Keep that energy for me.
Good energy.
Yes, yes. But before we get to Gold Cup, mailbag, the like, it's back. What's back, you might ask? Oh, the MLS All-Star Skills Challenge presented by Target is back Tuesday, July 30th at 8 p.m. Eastern. Yes, we got to get the brand recognition in there. Thank you, Target, for bringing this back for everybody. Do you guys remember the old school?
Yeah, I do.
Loved it.
I mean, Pablo Maurer, MLS assist on Twitter, was throwing some of these clips out, as he does, because he has like an archive of all the ridiculous stuff that we have forgotten about and should not have forgotten about. And they had, like, back in the day, Brian McBride just out here throwing Hail Mary bikes at the All-Star game. He's playing for the U.S. national team. He's got a big career coming for him in Europe, and he's, like, potentially just crushing his back going for bicycle kicks. I could not be more excited for this. It helps that the F2 freestylers, Jeremy Lynch, Billy Wingrove, do you follow them on Instagram?
I do not.
Okay. Do you guys follow them?
Yep, I'm on it, sure.
All right. This side of the table knows what's up. Doyle, you're still trying to get with the program here. These guys have what they do is incredible. Well,
the group is legit, too, of the All-Stars. You got Rooney, Vela, Dos Santos. Then you've got the Orlando team with Nani, Chris Mueller, and Sebastian Mendez. And then Atletico Madrid is, we know it's Koke. I don't know who the other
team is. Yeah, there's some TBDs on Atletico Madrid's
side. Come on, Godin out there just throwing two footers.
He just went to Inter Milan.
Oh, that's right.
Doyle wants a...
But that's a potential skills challenge that's missing here. We do have shots. We have touch and volley, which is basically like we just kick it up there. You control it however you want or finish however you want. Do something spectacular. And then passing, which is moving targets, like different distances. Basically, who can spray the best in that situation. My money's on Chris Mueller throughout. He's got the swag. That's going to carry him. I'm just kidding. It's not on Chris Mueller. I'm sorry.
I was a little confused there, too.
I think they could have used Sasha Kljestan in that one.
Yeah, that's true.
Yeah, that's true.
But Chris Mueller's going to bring the personality, which matters in this. It is going to be streamed literally everywhere. MLSsoccer.com, the MLS app, ESPN, Fox, Univision, TSN, TVA, 170 countries.
Are you going to stream it from
the world?
Your own Instagram or...
That's not how
Twitter
it works.
Account? No.
No, but it's on Twitch here.
Okay.
So you could simulcast on Twitch.
I'm going to be there. I'll tell you that.
So am I.
I'm going to be there as well.
Yeah.
Yeah, all of us. Doyle, you going to be there? You going to be at the hotel bar?
We'll see.
Okay.
I don't want to make any commitments that I won't be able to keep.
Okay. Carlos Vela, legit. Wayne Rooney.
If I am at the hotel, I'm going to be at the hotel bar. I'll be watching on one of the various platforms which
of course.
Streaming this.
So only six players from MLS in this, which doesn't feel like nearly enough. Who got the skills challenge snub on this? Who would we like to see out here just, you know, trying to bash targets on a practice field, trying to do ridiculous volleys, half volleys, scorpion kicks? It's obviously Zlatan.
Ilsinho. I'd like to see Ilsinho.
Yes. There's not really a dribbling aspect of this.
But just like he fits when you talk about skills and megging and being able to dribble guys and make them look silly and foolish, he's got to be there. He's the definition of skills when you think of guys in this league who can pull something out of nothing and you watch them dribble and you go, what did he just do? Yep. Like, that's Ilsinho.
What if there was, like, an old-timers day skills challenge, and it was, like, you guys and, like, Stu and Kyle Martino and Landon and whoever else?
That's
who would be the...
called men's league.
Dempsey.
Dempsey. Yeah, we do that. Yeah.
Clint would
Dempsey, be. Dempsey's got skills. Like, I think he's, like, he's low-key on him, too. Like, he can do a lot of different things and tricks, but, like... he's like, oh, that was the old Clint. Like, that's the old Deuce. Like, the new Deuce was just like.
This sounds like the senior tour.
Well, speaking of the senior tour, I was watching the Sounders game, and Chad Marsh retired, respect to the legend. Mm. But he was giving away a duffel bag worth of cleats. And I did something similar, but I was like, no, Chad, no. He thinks right now he's not going to play anymore. Mm. And that's going to be it. I'm done. I'm hanging him up. Hand out the boots. You want those boots back later in men's league. I'm telling you.
No, you don't.
And he's in Pacific Northwest. Maybe he's got a better connect than I do.
Do you guys have enough TAM or GAM to get Chad Marshall for your men's league?
What a
team?
Signing that would be.
Down in the Bowery?
That would be amazing.
Is that how it works? Is when MLS players resign, you just retire? You're like.
We give him a little bit of time. We don't go straight after him.
Go through intermediaries?
Nope.
Charlie's still, he's flirting around.
Charlie's in denial.
I saw Charlie in that Steve Nash game.
Oh yeah,
Charlie knows that he still has it. He's just holding it back. He's highest bidder.
Shooting from everywhere. Yeah. Love it.
That's what I do.
Darwin Quintero would be the name that I would want to see in a skills challenge. I just think I feel like every game, kind of like Ilsinho, they treat every game kind of like an all-star game.
Yeah.
Just putting fools on the ground. I think especially with the dribbling, the combination of the speed that you need to dribble at, but then also the ability to maneuver laterally through the cones. The same way we see in like the NBA All-Star game, you've seen like Kyrie Irving and a bunch of the guys go through kind of the weaving and then you hit a layup, turn the other direction. I think some type of actual skill through dribbling would be really cool.
Well, if you do that, I think you then throw in three guys that are very similar in that sense as Maxi Morales, Sebastian Blanco, and Nico Ladero. Like all those three.
Yeah.
Really, really shifty. Carlos Heel from the Revolution. Yeah. Really shifty. The ball's stuck to their feet and they're able to do, you know, they can, you know, pick apart defenses with their through balls.
I'm throwing in Alejandro Pozuelo. He's basically done the skills challenge in game so far. Now it's slowed down a little bit, but I think he'd be incredible there. Won't be there. We'll just have to dream about it. We have the shooting, we have the touch and volley, we have the passing. It's not enough for me.
Mm-hmm.
Before we move on to Uras and Curaçao, and they just barely got by. Curaçao, many people saying, had the better performance. Propose a skill game. It's not going to happen this year, but imagine we're waltzing into a boardroom somewhere. Mm. We have an opportunity.
Competitive head tennis. Like that's... We want to see that.
Yeah, and have a bracket. Have it be like a, you know, round robin, bring it all the way to the top. Maybe I would watch like coaching staff versus coaching staff in foot tennis. Because if you go to trainings, and obviously you guys know this better than I do, like I remember being at Sporting Kansas City training, and like Zoran and Peter and Carey and all these guys are like yelling and screaming and doing, frankly, pretty incredible things with the ball and are uber competitive about it. So I would love to see the actual, those staffs, it's like first seed, Sporting Kansas City taking on Ben Olsen and Chad Ashton of DC United.
What about when Patrick Vieira was here?
Oh,
I would have loved to give him a bye.
Give him a bye. I'm going to go goalkeeper distribution. You might think this is kind of like lame, but I want to see like a bunch of goalkeepers just like drop kick, try to hit buckets from like 70 yards. And Nick Raimondo's just like chef's kiss.
Yep.
Nothing but net. I would take that one.
I would pick David Bingham in that one. And actually Zach McMath too.
No, you wouldn't.
Yes, I would. I would. No, I played pickup with both those guys. No, I'm telling you, those guys, they you might not think about it, but if you play with these guys, especially in pickup, those guys can spray it.
Can I do tough touch? where you're literally just like...
Is that first touch the
tackle?
Yeah,
you're just like... No, you're just putting it as far up in the air at a crazy angle, whatever you want to do. We could even get like one of those, you know, the like, jugs machines that shoot the ball. Just fire it straight up. You got to bring
and
it
gotta
down.
And you got to bring it down like the
Ronaldinho.
Oh, I like that.
Yeah, the Ronaldinho touch.
Just fire Maradona it into the, style, like, yeah. the atmosphere and see who can bring it down with one touch.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'd like to see that.
What about Doyle? How about a dark arts skills game?
I actually...
And we can bring Pescadito and Blas back yes. to judge it.
Now, who would you pick from your top three of the dark arts right now in MLS?
Diego Chara is still number one, far and away, and he's awesome at it.
This would be like the version of somebody running down, you just like flick their ear as you go by.
Tati Castellanos might have a shout after this one.
That's a different one, but he's good at it.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
Is he? Like, yeah. I mean, he got away with it this weekend, but I don't...
Ozzy Alonso, too.
Yeah, Ozzy for sure.
I've been on the end of his...
So here's the drill. So it's basically just like wet the pitch.
wet the pitch. Okay.
Hear me out.
My imagination is running wild right now.
Okie doke.
Right, maybe we should stop there.
I'd say bring back Goalie Wars, too, but this is going to be a lot of fun. F2 Freestylers, Tuesday, the night before the All-Star game in Orlando, 8 p.m. Eastern. You can basically watch it everywhere. Wayne Rooney, Carlos Vela, Jonathan Dos Santos for the MLS All-Stars, Nani, Chris Mueller, Sebastian Mendez for Orlando City, Koke and TBD for Atletico Madrid. I'm sure the transfer window might bring in a couple good candidates for them there. Let's talk Gold Cup. U.S. in the quarterfinals, Jamaica in the quarterfinals, both winners on that side of the bracket. They're on to facing the semis. They did that back in 2015 in Atlanta. I was there. It didn't work out for the U.S., so a little deja vu there. On the other side, it's Haiti and Mexico, and that is because Canada, I was thinking about making the, like, you know,
Canada,
choking motion for what happened to them, but I just felt that it was maybe insensitive and inappropriate, so I didn't do it.
Especially because today's Canada Day, right?
Is it really?
Yeah.
Oh, my.
July 1st is their Independence Day.
Wow.
So tread lightly, my friend.
I'm going to tread much more lightly. We'll save that for just a little bit. Mexico threw by the skin of their teeth against Costa Rica in penalty kicks. Let's talk U.S. Curaçao. Greg Berhalter said afterwards, hey, everybody expected 5-0. Sorry, that's not what we gave to you, but we did get the result, and that's what matters.
Mm-hmm.
Curaçao had more possession. They had more shots. They had more shots on goal.
All the above.
I think if you took the jerseys off, identifiers off, and you just watched that game, would you say that Curaçao had the better performance outside of the obvious, which is that there was a goal scored and the U.S. scored it?
Yes, 100%. And that's because... they played with confidence. They built out of the back. They were in control. You never felt like comfortable watching the U.S. men's national team. You never felt like, oh, nothing to worry about. We're safe. We're pinning. If they have possession, it's only in their defensive half. No, this Curaçao team was pressing. They were creating opportunities, be it half chances. There weren't really clear chances. Breakaways, although Zach Steffen had to come up big a couple of times. But when you're watching the game, I was kind of left dumbfounded in the sense that what happened from the Trinidad and Tobago game, where they're flying, you know, that second half was really what all fans want to see from this team, to playing an opponent that's not as good as Trinidad.
I think better.
I was waiting for somebody to say that because I actually think that.
Well, we made them look better.
I mean,
I don't know if they're necessarily better.
I don't know, man. You look at Trinidad's results over the last, basically since they beat the U.S. and actually before that, they'd lost like 7 straight. They've been bad for a long time. Curaçao actually have some like legit results. They beat Qatar, who were respectable in Copa America. They beat Bolivia. They tied Bolivia.
Yep.
They went and won the King's Cup. And I know, look, India
they
and
beat
Vietnam.
Honduras. They drew Jamaica.
Yeah, I mean, they have some results.
I'm not trying to soft.
They beat Jamaica 2017 Caribbean Cup.
Exactly. So this Curaçao team is not – it's not Barbados, right? It's not an absolute minnow. The U.S. unquestionably should have played better. And I feel like the performance brought us back to the start of the month when the U.S. lost against Jamaica, and it was because we just had no way of getting numbers to the ball in central midfield. We couldn't stop the ball. We couldn't put pressure on the ball. And that allows teams to just settle into this very comfortable type of possession soccer. And I think it has like a galvanizing effect when you're realizing like, oh, we can just knock the ball around. We're connecting passes here. This is fun, guys. Let's go right at this team. the U.S. becomes easy to play against. And I think that's what we saw up until the final, 25 yards, where the back line actually did, I think, a pretty good job of limiting the quality of the chances. But it was a worrying performance from the U.S. Like, Curaçao's a pretty respectable team. They're not so respectable that the U.S. should have struggled to beat them 1-0 at home.
No, when I think of Curaçao, I thought they're just going to defend, get numbers behind the ball, get into, like, block, deep blocks. Don't let U.S., like, have an easy game of penetrating their final third and look to counter. This was, we're going to play. We're just going to attack. And when you think about difficult game, when I expected a difficult game, it was, we're going to have dominate possession. We're going to have 70% possession, but the chances aren't going to be there just because they're really, athletic. They're just going to fight. You really have to, like, win 1-0 because you have all the ball, you have all the chances, but nothing's going in. This was, we're outplaying you. And the press wasn't 100% committed from the U.S. side. Curaçao could play out easily. And that's where I was concerned, because it wasn't, they're going to make this tough for us by just defending and fighting and clawing and being difficult. This was, no, we're going to outplay you.
It's been a progression for Curaçao. They lost to El Salvador 1-0 to start the tournament. Then they beat Honduras, who had 35 shots in that match. Jamaica should have won that third game in the group. They had a ton of chances. They missed them. And then they get here. So it was a progression for them, and I'm so interested to see what happens to Curaçao over the next couple of years, because now they have Nations League, and they have Costa Rica and Haiti in their Nations League group, so they have another opportunity to play giant killer. Greg Berhalter said, hey, look, let's give credit to Curaçao. Well, we've given credit to Curaçao. And I think, look, Dave and I sat here before this tournament started and said, Curaçao can surprise some people. This is a team that has something. You may not know about them, but they have professionals, they have a little bit of momentum, they're building their national team program, not from scratch, but look, they went from the Netherlands to Antilles.
They're building
it. They had five islands, and they had to cut it down and, like, basically restart everything, and all their politics are crazy, and the federation is different, and they've had, I think, a couple different heads of federation be kicked out by FIFA. So they've had some interesting times. So it's exciting to see them get a little bit of momentum. But again, is this, you've asked this a couple times in this tournament, Kalen, like, is this good enough for the U.S. national team?
I've come to lower my expectations with the national team. And when I look at the performance, yes, I agree with everything Charlie said and the group, really, that it's not good enough. But we've said that quite a bit over time. And I still look at where the quality on the pitch comes from. And it showed on the goal. It's Christian and Weston. And I keep thinking about when I feel down about it, I keep thinking about who we're missing still. And you talk about pressure in the middle of midfield, and I think of Tyler Adams. Yep. And just how much you miss him in a game like this to be able to get pressure on the ball, win balls, turn around the team, and go the other direction. I don't think we have our strongest lineup yet. We haven't seen it. I don't think we will see that probably this summer, maybe until World Cup qualifying. And the people we do have aren't always in the top form right now with the time of the year where it falls for some of our top European players that aren't fit and even some injuries that we've had throughout the camp. So, look, we haven't – if you're looking on the positive side, and I'm trying to do that too myself, haven't given up a goal still throughout the tournament. We're into the semifinal. Before the tournament started, I'm not even sure if we were going to get that far. And now we've got an opportunity to measure ourselves against Jamaica and potentially Mexico.
The interesting thing to me – from this game, if you look at the way the U.S. played, the link between defense and midfield and the attack didn't really exist. And this is one of the dangers of playing Christian Pulisic as a 10, because he's not a 10. He's a winger. And so he vacates that central midfield position to go over to the wing all the time. And it works when the U.S. is having 60% of the ball, like we did against Trinidad and Tobago or Guyana, because we're dominating the ball so much that you could suddenly play to the overloads and create dynamic overloads. And, suddenly he and Areola are both ripping teams up. But when he does that in a situation where we're just not able to put a foot on the ball, like what happened against Curaçao, then we're going 2 versus 3 or sometimes even 4 in central midfield. And when that happens, Jossie, the center forward, has to drop back and be the fulcrum. He has to be not just a center forward, but a target forward, a guy that you play to and through, a guy who sort of organizes the team shape with his footwork and his passing. Jossie was doing that job. And I think that part of what we've seen over this tournament is that Jossie is there to teach Josie and hopefully Josh Sargent from across the sea the dance steps. Because everything that Greg Berhalter does is so structured. And so if this, you know, pass goes here, you move there, the next pass is here. And Jossie understands all that because he's played for Greg Berhalter for a year and a half now. Josie's recognition is a little bit slow with that at times. But I don't think Greg Berhalter is a crazy person. I don't think he looked at Jossie Zardes 18 months ago when he acquired him for the crew. And then he rebuilt that crew system so that Jossie basically wasn't touching the ball until he was in the 18. He was the lowest usage center forward in all of MLS last year. They didn't use him in the buildup at all. He still scored 20 goals. Suddenly now, playing with the national team, Jossie is an integral part of every single buildup that we have. I don't think the system is built for Jossie. I think he's keeping the seat warm until Josie really gets it, like really understands all the movements and is healthy. And I think that's what we're going to get in the semifinals and the final. And then the next step is hopefully Josh Sargent or whatever good young striker is next in the line is getting this film and is playing for whether it's Rafael Vicky with the 17s or whoever's going to be the next coach of the 20s or Jason Christ with the 23s. They get the film as well, and they understand the expectations as well, because we had a game last night where we couldn't create anything in the attacking third unless we were playing through Jossie Zardes' feet. That's not going to work.
And it's funny you bring that up, because when you look at Joseph Martinez and his involvement in the buildup with when you had guys like Almiron last season, he wasn't involved in the buildup. He doesn't even look at the ball until it crosses half field. And then he's in his position where he's in normally times he'd be in an offside position on the back shoulder of a defender. And the defender's like, do I mark him? Do I not? And then you have someone break through on the wing and then he's there for a tap-in. You cannot do that on the international level. The game's so much faster. And then when you talk about tactics, defenders, midfielders, everything's so structured and organized that if you're not If a team can shut you down one way, you have to be able to pivot. You have to be able to attack in different ways. And so as a striker in a lone striker system, that striker has to be able to come into midfield and drop deep. And then when he's either uncovered because the center back doesn't step with him and he's able to turn, and then you have wingers making those diagonal runs, or a center back's coming with him, he can turn him, and then you're opening up the field for everyone else. Jossie Zardes hasn't done it. He's at an age where I don't think he's going to develop into a player that can do that. So, as Doyle said, he's warming up the seat for Josie to get fully healthy.
Let me ask you guys, because you're both strikers, would you want to play in a system that is this structured and this mapped out, what Greg Berhalter has sort of tried to build for the U.S. national team?
I would if you saw a benefit from it. For me as a number nine, and if I'm just going to stay high and capitalize on chances and just score, great. But who doesn't want to be involved in the buildup? Who doesn't want to have touches? I want to feel like I'm in the game. I want to be a part of the game. I want to be getting touches. I want to be able to play the ball. I never felt good or comfortable in a game where I was only getting minimal touches. If I was not involved at all until maybe a cross or a set piece, I didn't feel comfortable. I never felt like I got into the game. So on the international level, when I was playing with the U.S., be it we were in a two-striker system, me and Josie, but you always felt in it because you were checking, you were making runs deep, you were, you know, battling for balls, you felt like there was a combination, you're always getting touches, and so therefore you're involved and you're in different parts of the field. In this system, you're relied on to stay high, stretch the field, and when you do come back, you have to do something with it. You have to be able to get other guys involved. Christian Pulisic, that's his comfort zone, is being on the wide areas. So he'll, like you said, he likes to float out wide because he's comfortable there. He knows what he can do. He can face guys 1v1. When he's in the middle, your sense of positioning, your awareness of being able to account for not only all the rest of the attackers on your team, but the different midfielders that are crunching down on you, center backs pushing up on you, it's so much different. The space is so much tighter that you really can't afford to turn and take people on, because if you lose it there in the midfield, they're coming right down your throat in the international game. And it's vital that you keep possession international. That's one thing you learned is the game's so fast that you need to keep possession. You cannot lose possession. It's so valuable when you're playing on the international.
And some of the responsibility with that is on the wingers as well, to be able to tuck in. I would love to play in this system. I'd probably find more of an outside role as opposed to the
right
traditional
back.
Number nine. No.
Sweeper?
I've played right back, actually, in a couple matches.
Have you told Bobby Warshaw about them?
No, I haven't, yeah.
He's got his eye on you. He's been doing some scouting. He's like, I really think that Kalen Carr has got something.
But, yeah, I think some of the responsibility falls on those wingers to be able to help in possession as well. And Greg Berhalter said this, that when they were looking for ways to find through, some of it was to Jossie, but some of it was also to try and find those wingers. They're not just traditional wingers where they stay out wide. They're supposed to tuck in, whether it's as a second forward or in those little pocket spaces in the gaps to be able to help with possession. When I look at our player pool, I don't see a ton of guys that have really added that next step to their game. There's a ton of talented wingers who are good wide and able to get to an end line, beat guys one-on-one, get behind, stretch the field. But that ability to come in, combine, flick it into the striker, continue your run one-twos, I've seen more of that from Areola this tournament than I have in the past with him, especially him playing on the left-hand side where he usually plays a little bit more as a right-sided winger, yeah. And he's impressed there. Boyd has. He held on the ball a little bit too long in this time, but he's shown promise tucking in. But especially if that forward isn't super comfortable tucking in sometimes, keep him higher, protect him, have those wingers tuck in, help a little bit in that possession to be an outlet, then keep the play moving. Even when I look at Jordan Morris or Jonathan Lewis, that's still a part of their game that still needs to improve, especially for those two. So that winger position needs to be a little bit more of a hybrid where you're not just a winger. You have to help out those strikers as well.
Greg Berhalter's got to be thinking about a lot of these things every single day, diving in. He's such an analytical guy. When we talk to him, you can kind of feel the progression as he's thinking through what's happening. And he said on this show, look, we had to simplify it a little bit. To get what we want. And what they want is to be in the final against, we figure, probably Mexico, though maybe Haiti can get the job done. We'll talk about Haiti in here just a little bit because the scenes, both in their locker room, on the island, expats, whatever it was, I mean, it was a special day for Haitians. Let's look ahead to Jamaica real quick because we won't be back till Thursday. This game is on Wednesday. By then, we will know the two finalists because Haiti and Mexico play on Tuesday. What would you be thinking right now if you're Greg Berhalter? What would you be talking about? What film would you be showing? How would you be preparing for this semifinal?
I would look at Jamaica and what they do well, which is counter. They use their athleticism. They use their speed. They're going to, I would think, sit back. They give you possession. They concede it. But they know as soon as there is a turnover, they're trying to go right down, put the ball in behind into space, use the speed of Darren Maddox, you know, Powell, Lawrence, these guys who can get in behind and then just try and be dangerous. Ultimately, I think when you look at your team and you look at yourself, it's press, the press. How are we connected from front to back, the midfield to the strikers? We didn't see them working together and working well. Being able to trap a defender, give him one option, and everyone know that one option, and then close it from there. And so when you turn it over, you automatically know, okay, this is where we're trying to go. This is how we're going to break from this turnover. We didn't see that. So I think they have to be much more aggressive and committed to the press when they don't have the ball. Come up higher up the field. Have teams try and beat you by playing. Because the more you suffocate them, the less time you give a team, the more uncomfortable it is for them. Because most of these teams that they're playing in CONCACAF, they're not comfortable under pressure. They don't have guys
Charlie,
who can beat.
That starts at the front, right? I've seen guys throughout the tournament, whether it's even in the Trinidad game in the beginning of the game, they got close into these positions where they could press and then kind of backed off a little bit. And at some point, as a striker, you have to trust the people behind you. You have to trust the midfielders and ultimately those center backs, Long and Zimmerman. They do that every week in MLS. You have to trust them that they're going to win that one-on-one duel against that center striker at some point to be able to win. And it starts at the front because I've seen hesitation from Zardes, from Areola, from Doyle to be able to really...
Always from Doyle.
Boyd. Sorry. Doyle always.
Always. Very hesitant, though.
Never hesitant.
From pushing all the way. And I think that comes with a little bit of just trust from the guys behind you. And again, it helps when you have a Tyler Adams in there and you have a feeling somebody's going to really put out that fire. But they have to be able to push a little bit more courageously forward into that press.
I just think it's tough because, look, Michael can't cover ground like he used to. He just can't. and it was like so apparent in this game, and it has been more and more apparent over the past 18 months. He just doesn't win the ball in those situations, and sometimes doesn't even slow it down. And Weston McKennie is so gifted, and we could all see it in moments, but in minute-to-minute gameplay, he disappears. He doesn't influence the game the way a real central midfielder needs to influence it. And my working theory with Weston is that it's just reps. He hasn't played a lot in central midfield for Schalke. They've played him everywhere, you know, everywhere under the sun, basically, except that. So hopefully, you know, a year from now, we'll be talking about what a great season he had in Germany, and he looks like a $20 million player, and he's winning everything, and he's always around the ball. But with those two guys in there, it becomes such a weakness on the defensive side. And then the other part of it is just structurally, whether we're pressing or whether we're mid-block, we're playing in that 4-2-2-2. And so we really only have two central midfielders. So if you go and you rewatch the game, which is what I was doing at 4 a.m. when I couldn't go to sleep, Curaçao was just pulling their wingers inside. And suddenly it was, they were outnumbering us 3-2, and then it was 4-2, and at times it was 5-2 in central midfield. So they would just hit it back and forth across the back line until a gap opened up, and then whoop, split Weston and Michael, and we're backpedaling. And it was just so easy for them. So I understand that. I agree with you. We probably have to press. We want, like, Jamaica can't pass the ball the way Curaçao did. They've never even tried to pass the ball like that. But there are just structural and personnel concerns inherent to the U.S. national team right now. And, you know, 2 weeks from now, or a week from now, when we're talking about, you know, what did we learn from the Gold Cup, I think on the negative side, it's going to be that. And the big question going forward for the rest of 2019 and into 2020 is, how does Greg Berhalter fix that?
U.S. getting by Jamaica? I'm thinking back to the friendly. I mean, they won 1-0, did the Reggae Boys.
Yes,
Jamar Nicholson had a screamer in that game. That was the difference. He's been inefficient, let's say, during this tournament, including against Curaçao. You've got, you mentioned some of their other players. Dever Orgil has been pretty good for them as well. Everybody feel good about U.S. getting by to the final, July 7th, Chicago, Soldier Field, sold out according to CONCACAF?
Yep, U.S.-Mexico in the final.
Yeah, I think it'll be tight, but I think the fact that the back line is playing well, no goals conceded throughout, I think Christian, somebody finds a moment to get through, but I think it's going to be really tight, maybe 1-0.
Yeah, sounds right.
9 p.m. Eastern on Wednesday, 8:30 p.m. Eastern is Club and Country right here in the AT&T MLS studios. We break it all down, give you the lineups, all the talking points, everything you need to know before the game, and then after the game, the highlights, all of the discussion, pre and post, every U.S. national team game here at the Gold Cup. That is Club and Country. We talked a lot about Canada last night.
Oof.
Because they were up 2-0. Jonathan David, Lucas Cavallini, they're waltzing, they're feeling good, we're back. Canada, well, back is, that's one way of putting it. We're here, and we're competitive, and we think we can win this.
I'm old enough to remember the last time Canada was good.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, you've picked them 8 straight times. What, every year, every single tournament since 2000?
About 2005.
Okay,
yeah,
you took a 5-year break there. Man, John Herdman, I'd like to play the audio here. It's almost too emotional to play his post-game press conference. I'm not going to say on the brink of tears, but just like, you know, shell-shocked. He said, this bloody hurts. This is awful. We wasted a huge opportunity, which there's no doubt that they did.
Lack of experience, lack of belief from my perspective. I think this team, and I keep going back to it, but this game against Mexico where they decided to not play their first team, essentially, or they decided to experiment a little bit. And they showed flashes of good play in that game, but that was such a big opportunity, I think, not just for the points that were available to them, but they were going to go through. But to actually prove to themselves, to everyone, but also to themselves, that they could go against a Mexico, that they could go deep in the tournament. And I just think when it came down to it, they just lacked that experience to be able to see the game out, to understand that it wasn't a safe lead for them. It wasn't a comfortable game for them, and that there was real danger present. They just never seemed to sense it.
So it was Herdman and not the players then?
No, it's on the players as well. But it
comes down from the top. So the coach put that team out, changed the tactics, changed the personnel, and was like, you know what? Let's not show them all our cards because we're going to play them again in the semifinals, or it's, I'm not too sure that we can get a result. Let me rest my players for the rest of the games. Either way, you're sending a message to your team that I don't think we're quite ready to beat a Mexico. And it showed.
Or that it wasn't important.
Right.
Look, Herdman bears blame here, and he said that in his press conference. There's no doubt about that. But come on, there's also just elementary mistakes that Canada are making in this game. It's shocking for a team that the expectations that they have to make the plays that they did. And something like the first goal, Godinho and Borja, and I mean, neither of them looked like they even cared. Like the pass back is awful, but the challenge from the goalkeeper is just like, ah, ho hum, this is going to work out for me.
It looks like
how'd that work out?
He was kind of daydreaming a little bit as the ball was being played back. It was weird from Borjan because he's such an experienced player, and he's done this at a high level. He's been a very good keeper for a while. Coming into this tournament, we all sort of identified Canada's strength in attack, and I think they showed it, and we also identified their weakness in defense. Central defense actually held up pretty well for them throughout this tournament. It was those fullbacks. Godinho was frankly in over his head at the international level. He showed that every time he set foot on the pitch. And then Alphonso Davies, and this was the worrying one because the game-losing goal, Alphonso Davies just did not have the wherewithal, the mental energy, the physical energy to track.
I feel like you lose him as a left back for Canada.
Well, maybe, but that's where Bayern Munich's going to play him.
Right. But again, we get to this conversation where he's going to be best for Canada versus where he is for Bayern Munich. For Bayern Munich, left back, great spot for him because he can get, they're going to dominate possession, right? And he can stay high. And you're going to look to Alphonso Davies more on the offensive side rather than the defensive side.
Mm-hmm.
And you're still going to have the guidance from the right players and leaders to keep you in the right positions on the field when the ball is turned over. Canada, they need more from him offensively. They need him to be more involved in the offense. They don't really need him defensively. And he can use what he's learned at Bayern to help with the tracking back, like you said. But I feel like they need him to be creating more of their offense because they don't have enough players to do that for them.
See, I completely disagree. I think Canada's attack is awesome. With David, with Cavallini, Jonathan Osorio's upped his game so much. Junior Hoylett is still a high-level contributor.
Didn't think Junior Hoylett brought it in this one.
No, he didn't. He didn't.
Especially late in the game. I was shocked by some of the decision-making.
But we could all see this game. The problem was not the attack.
That's true.
The problem was it was winning time, and Canada's young fullbacks did not get it done.
And Marc-Anthony Kay. Where is he?
Yeah, why is he not on the field? It's ridiculous.
He's playing on the best team in MLS and one of the best players on the field this season, and he doesn't get into the Canadian team?
Going to read you some mail here. Austin in Fort Worth says, I told you guys about Canada, and y'all booed me. I expect an apology and a free T-shirt. Austin hollered at us before this tournament and basically predicted that there was going to be a catastrophic gut punch result.
Do we have a Maple Leaf Extra Time T-shirt we could send him?
Yeah, we should probably get on
deserves.
That.
He deserves a T.
Should we send him a
Ryan,
Jonathan Osorio signed?
We have a lot
of
Ryans who email us. Says, this feels worse than the 8-1 against Honduras. How do we as Canada fans go on from here? That's where we'll end this conversation. Where do they go now?
To Twitter to follow Patrice Bernier, because Patrice is still our guy. Patrice, he's still optimistic. He said they're going to learn from this. They're going to come back better. And by the way, Canada versus U.S. in Nations League in October, right?
I believe so. Cuba is in that group as well. But you get a home and home with the U.S. and Canada, which is going to be really, really interesting. I'm personally jacked for Nations League. Maybe I'm one of the only ones out there. I'm already like thinking about it, looking at fixtures. Gold Cup's not over, and I'm like, there's something wrong with me. I should not. You're up at 4 a.m. So was I, looking at that group D.
It's not even the U.S. Canada Cuba group. It's the Haiti Costa Rica Curacao group that has me kind of jacked about Nations League.
Let's get to Canada and where they go from here. Mm-hmm. Like, how do you react? What do you do if you're John Herdman? What do you do? Is it just like, okay, well, back to the drawing board. We'll regather for Nations League? Because I don't know that they'll have a bunch of friendlies, because Canada just doesn't play that often, it seems like.
I personally think the danger is in them, is in that optimism and in just saying, oh, well, you know, it's okay. We're going to learn from this. We're going to regroup. Like, this was a disaster for this team, and I think they should acknowledge it as such and keep the expectation higher, because that's where it was pointing, is towards that direction. And when you start to accept this from a cultural level, a fan level, whatever, Like, that's where it begins to become a problem and a little bit more of a chronic issue. And this group deserves a lot better than that. I'm sure they feel devastated by it. They should feel that.
It sounds like the U.S. men's national team.
Yeah, exactly.
Right. Yeah, come to terms, man. I mean, look, they wanted to go to at least the semifinals. They didn't get there. And Haiti put in an amazing performance, so resilient, came back, got this win. You saw all the celebrations. Port-au-Prince was with a carnival in the middle of the night. I mean, it's a program-changing result for Haiti, for Curaçao to get there. And, you know, maybe now it's time for me to go on my little rant, because this is what frustrates me. I was just watching the highlights on, I think, Sunday morning, and, you know, all respect to Steve Nichol, everything he's accomplished and done in this game. It's way more than I will ever do. I fully grant that. But I got pulled in, let's say, and we're not immune to this either. We just did a show where Bobby Warshaw told you that Christian Pulisic shouldn't be a starter, and all you said we were trolls. But the headline was, the Gold Cup is a disaster and it's a waste of time. And I just felt triggered. I was just like, for who? For who is it a disaster and waste of time? And what does it say about you that you think it is a disaster and waste of time? I completely get that this tournament is imperfect. I completely get that MLS fans out there might be saying, ah, damn, this sucks because we don't have XYZ players. Well, by the way, players are gone for Copa America and AFCON as well. You calling that a waste of time too? Probably not. Probably not. It's just because we, as North American soccer fans, in my opinion, like to bash on the stuff that we have. It's like our second pastime. It's like, oh, yeah, well, you know, we love Copa America. I'm watching every game. AFCON, soccer nerd, Gold Cup comes. Like, not every 2 years. That cheapens everything. This tournament is a waste of time and boring. Yeah, maybe if they're the U.S. and Mexico, maybe. But not for the U.S. right now. Are you kidding me? We just missed the World Cup. We're scuffling through. We just barely beat Curaçao. Greg Berhalter's trying to build something. Certainly not a waste of time for us. It's a waste of time for Mexico. Their top seven players aren't here. That was the logic I heard. So? It's Tata Martino's first tournament in charge. You think if they lost to Costa Rica in the quarterfinals, everything would have been hunky-dory and everybody in Mexico would have been like, all good, man. It's okay. Gold Cup doesn't matter to us anyway. We've wanted a ton. We don't need this one. No. They win that penalty kick shootout. They're celebrating because just five of them have won this tournament. And then you look down, and this is where it really matters. It's not about the U.S. and Mexico. We might be able to do it every 4 years, and that's what everybody wants. But is it good for Guyana to do it every 4 years? Is it good for Haiti? Is it good for Jamaica? Is it good for El Salvador? Is it good for Nicaragua? Is it good for all of these other countries who just frankly don't get the opportunities and resources that the two at the very top get and need this competitively, from a funding standpoint, from a rep standpoint, because they may not get together and play otherwise? The Nations League, Gold Cup are important to the U.S. and Mexico, but to CONCACAF in general. And to call it a disaster and a waste of time, to me, says way more about the person saying it and their perspective on this region, these teams, these players, than anything else. Tell Neil Danz that this was a waste of time. Tell Guyana it was a waste of time. Did anybody see the coverage? No, you didn't, because I'm a nerd and I saw all this. Before Guyana and Belize played in their final Nations League qualifying game, it was the players were obsessed. This was their opportunity. They'll never get this again, ever. I love this. I feel triggered by it because it's BS, man. It's disregarding so many people, so many nations, so much of our region. No, we're not UEFA. Sorry. UEFA spent 150 years getting here. We haven't done that yet. So play it every 2 years. And okay, if you want to call it a cash grab sometimes, go ahead and do so. But you know what that cash does? It lets these teams get together and improve the quality of soccer in CONCACAF. The head coach of Haiti said, without Nations League, we wouldn't be here. Haiti finished at the very top of Nations League qualifying. Without those games, without that funding, they wouldn't be here. They wouldn't be one of the best stories in soccer this year in a long time, honestly. They could beat Mexico. It's not all about the U.S. and Mexico. It's about CONCACAF. And as CONCACAF gets better, that's also good for the U.S. and Mexico because it forces us to get better. Curaçao shouldn't be a waltz. Guyana shouldn't be a waltz.
When Iceland's not a waltz, everybody celebrates. When Curaçao's not a waltz, something's wrong.
It just triggers me because, like, if you have these things, are you not watching this tournament? Yeah, there's been some games that are stinkers. Sure, every tournament has that. Every league has that. It happens. It's okay. There have been a lot of really good games. There have been incredible goals. There's been a ton of drama. There's been storylines. There have been things that you should be able to sink your teeth into and to just dismiss it. just really frustrates me.
This should be the next year's promo for the Gold Cup.
It was really good,
just
man.
Just flip this out and put it out for the Gold Cup.
Let me ask you this. I would you be willing to modify every other tournament? Because the underlying argument you're making there is that having the Gold Cup every 2 years is good because it's good and fun, but also because you're sort of spinning toward the future.
Yep.
Right? Because it's about building programs like Haiti and Curacao.
Sure. But for those programs, the present is just as important as the future and will inform the future.
So then if I offer to you to do every other Gold Cup in the same manner of the Olympics, where it's a U23 team plus three overage players, three guys of any age, would that not differentiate plus have...
When you say differentiate, what you're saying is that less people would care and it would be less competitive.
No, I don't think so.
In my mind, that's what you're saying.
I don't think so.
It's not as good a tournament at that point. It doesn't do as much
in a way
for nations. For who?
For me.
Doyle.
Exactly. That's my question every time I hear this. Like, we'll just do it this way. It would be better. Like, for who? For who? That's always the question that I have.
For whom?
It's not... Okay, fine, Doyle. I knew you would get me on that. I mean, listen, this, Haiti midfielder Steven Saba after this game. To be honest, I cried. I was crying, and then I got jumped on. It feels amazing. I could not be happier than this. And we want to take that opportunity away from people. We want to take Neil Danz off that field. Listen to what Jerry Ngari said after that goal that got Curacao here. And they had to wait on pins and needles to see what Honduras would do against El Salvador. This means everything. This is unbelievable. It's a beautiful thing for this team and for our island. Like it I'm gonna end our rant here. I love the Gold Cup. We're on to the semifinals Tuesday and Wednesday. Here they come.
Maybe Mexico, Curacao, Haiti final. Let's go.
Hey man, the island's got a chance here. We could go Jamaica, Haiti, and it could be nuts. Maybe we wouldn't get the crowd that we would get if Mexico got there, but as a avowed CONCACAF nerd, I'm here for it.
Weeby's on the payroll of the Curacao Tourism Board.
They made that
plug
joke
in
last
that
night
for about 3 weeks.
Not
now.
Actually a joke. If Martin. Curacao would like to holler at me, I don't have representation. I just have open DMs.
Yeah.
So if you would like to get in those DMs, I'll be there waiting for you. Okay? Just make sure that I can bring a small child with me. Let's talk MLS here. We've spent a lot of time ranting about the Gold Cup. Mm-hmm. All aboard the San Jose bandwagon. Tommy Thompson got his stump speech going after four straight losses. And then they got what you said it last night on Matchday Central. Is it the best record in Major League Soccer since then?
Yeah.
And if it's not, it's somewhere close. And who really cares about the minutia there? 3-0. Your rivals come to Stanford Stadium. Adios, Galaxy. Adios, Zlatan. Shea Salinas is whipping his shirt around his head and picking up yellow cards just for nostalgia's sake.
He must work out.
Ah, he does work out. It was actually, he's just trying to humble all of us, isn't he, when he does that? Gah. So what makes him special? I heard you tell me what makes him special. Like,
you want me to go into it again?
If you want to.
I think having a manager like Matias Almeida, who's won a lot wherever he's gone, having a guy with that credibility in the locker room, I think matters. And from everything the Quakes players say, he's also like a super optimistic guy. Like, we see the fiery, the passion, and like we've talked about the man marking scheme and all of these sort of accoutrements, but these guys, whether it's the old guys like Wando or younger guys like Jackson Ewell or Tommy Thompson, they're all saying, like, he inspires us. He makes us want to play better, and then he's given them the opportunities to. And there haven't been any sacred cows. Wando stunk at the start of the year. Wando got benched. Wando had to fight his way back into the lineup, and he delivered. Mm-hmm. Nick Lima, who we all thought was going to come into the, because he played so well for the national team in January, we thought he was going to be the breakout player. He got benched. He had to fight his way back into the starting lineup. Like, if you go down, like, Matias Almeida has been able to do that, but he's been able to keep some sort of unity within the team as well. They all look like they're buying in, and they all look like they know. You have to go into every challenge like you mean it, and you have to win the ball, because that's what the Quakes, that's what they're based on more than anything else. So they're all going into every challenge with their hair on fire, trying to win the ball. And that has been tough for teams to deal with.
Everybody but Magnus Eriksson. He doesn't have hair,
that's
so
fair,
you know, it's more of like
the ball joke. I get it.
Like the flames on top of the head, kind of the Greek mythology sort of thing. But he was not good last year.
No, nobody was.
Nobody was, but that's the difference. And
I think coming into this,
he said they were down. I walked into here and everybody was down.
Coming into this season, if you look at that roster, you'd make a list of players that you would trade for. It was only Nick Lima. It was literally only one player. And Almeida has revived careers.
So Doyle obviously would have traded for Jackson Ewell.
I thought he had the talent, but like after 2 years of him not playing, you're like, okay, well, is he even going to be a starter?
They're rolling along. Congratulations to San Jose. It's a blessing to have Mateus Almeida in the league. I think we all kind of understood that, maybe.
Hashtag blessed.
Hashtag blessed. Yeah, see, now you're picking it up. You'll have an Instagram soon enough. Maybe even follow the F2 Freestylers. Meanwhile, as they are in on every challenge, Frank DeBoer is pulling Pity Martinez off the field in a 2-1 win and saying he is, quote, a danger to the team. Now, as you pointed out, Kalen, in the pre-meeting here.
That's a
every get, you know take yeah, he's when fight, he speaks he's fighting guys in the English field. Take it with a grain of salt, Frank DeBoer, because he's not it. As he we've seen before, not always getting his message across. But this is another point to what you were saying about Mateus Almeida. If they're not getting it done for you, not doing what you need as a coach, take him off. Justin Miram delivered, vintage Miram, like back to 2015-2016 when he was so good. Before we get
well,
to the mailbag,
make no mistake, I think part of the reason they brought in Miram is because of Martinez's form. Yeah. They thought maybe Martinez was going to be that winger that was going to be able to break people down one-on-one. I think they recognized pretty quickly that wasn't going to be the case, that he was better off in the middle of the pitch, and that he needed the ball to feet always. And so now Miram shows huge flash. I mean, we've known his quality from before, but this was a big game for him in front of that crowd, and he shows his quality to be able to tuck inside, just give them something a little bit different, because they'd been searching for that so desperately down the left flank, even giving the ball to Breck Shea for the most part and asking him to create, right? And we saw that's not necessarily his best role. His role is just to get forward, bomb forward, try and whip in service, but it's not going to be something special from a one-on-one point or tucking into the inside of his foot the way we've seen Justin Miram do it over the years. So huge. I mean, this is a time in the year where players are missing people. Atlanta United is missing so many right now. And so to have Justin Miram step up in a big way, not just the result, but I think can he use this to go forward and unlock some of that? That's going to mitigate some of the growing pains from this team until PT Martinez, who has a ton of quality, can figure it out, get up some positive results for himself.
I consider myself one of the biggest Justin Miram stands around Major League Soccer, and it's been painful to like watch him miss that part of himself that we saw for so long with Columbus Crew and for Iraq as well. Mm. Hopefully this is just a little bit of a taste that helps him rediscover it,
gets him
confident, and gets him pushing forward. Before we get to quick mail, and it's an interesting one as NBA free agency heats up, I got to ask you a little bit of a exercise, guys. We're calling it Portland in the playoff line. Portland, we all expect to jump above that playoff line because of, you know, Brian Fernandez, who now has 6 goals in 5 games. Apologies to your record, Charlie, the one that you didn't even know that you had from DC United, 4-4 in your first 4 games. Take a look below the playoff line and eliminate the Portland Timbers. Who has the best chance of climbing out? The Colorado Rapids beat LAFC this weekend. I repeat, the Colorado Rapids beat LAFC with Carlos Vela, with the vast majority of their players. No Walker Zimmerman, no Mark Anthony Kaye, but still, talent-wise, LAFC are better. Beat them. New England won again. Sporting Kansas City didn't win again. RSL won. They're right there. Who's making the jump? Who's going to be the team that breaks a heart above the playoff line and pushes them down?
No one.
No one?
No, I don't.
You think it's set? This is it.
Well, I mean, nothing is set in MLS, but if I were to pick these groups, I think the Dynamo will stay up. I think Minnesota United stays up, Dallas, San Jose. Actually, I know we've been like singing their praises right now, but I do have questions about whether they're going to be able to carry this out throughout the whole season. So I think if there were a team maybe to fall, I actually would probably pick San Jose still. I know that's unpopular right now, and their form right now is tremendous. But other than that, I mean, Salt Lake is always a danger. They're hovering right where they kind of always do at that 7-6-7-8 spot. But yeah, Portland would be probably the only team from that list.
Portland's going up.
Yeah, for sure.
Portland's going up. Yeah, Brian Fernandez. It's going up. I think Minnesota's coming down.
Mm. Even after the 7-1.
7-1 versus Cincinnati.
You notice I didn't say who they beat.
You set them up for that.
I'll put it out there. Cincinnati.
Against, yeah.
I don't think there's another team other than Portland who I would bet on climbing over the line. If there was one, it's probably RSL because they've only played 7 home games so far. They have more home games left than the teams directly above them, including Minnesota and Houston, who are the two in grave danger of missing.
Those are the two that I would be concerned about there.
And then in the Eastern Conference, if you look at how Chicago have looked for long stretches and the chances that they've gotten in that Nemanja Nikolic has somehow managed to miss, this team should have like 6, 7, 8 more points than they actually do. And we've seen teams...
Maybe more.
Yeah, maybe more, right? And we've seen teams play like that during one half of the season, and then come the second half of the season, they suddenly flick the switch. I think Chicago probably has the best chance in the Eastern Conference.
Problem with the Eastern Conference, though, is New York City, Red Bulls, Atlanta, D.C., maybe to a lesser extent Philly. Those all feel good to me. Montreal don't feel as good to me.
No, they don't.
But they have a big cushion as far as just points earned. Now, they have a little bit of cushion of points games played as well. Toronto FC, big question mark. By the way, even bigger question mark here because I'm trolling Twitter last night because I can't go to bed. I'm all hyped and jacked up after these Gold Cup shows and Match Day Central shows.
Wait, can I just say... Write Montreal into the playoffs in Penn.
Okay. Going Penn. Penn, do you mean Baron T?
Yeah, I'm Baron T. Okay. Montreal in the playoffs. They've only played 8 home games so far. They've done it this whole season basically without Piatti. Now whether they get him back or not, they are going to add something significant in the transfer window. And if you go back to June of last year, they've basically played at like a 55-60 point pace. So their goal differential is terrible. It's like a joke that they're up in second place in the Eastern Conference. But that you can trace back to like 2 or 3 games, the one in Kansas City. I think there was another one they lost 4-0 or something. So I think Montreal's in there.
When you say significant addition, how significant?
Give them Sam Johnson over Maxi Arruti, and I think they're there. Because Maxi Arruti will shoot from like 30 every time. Sam Johnson's just waiting until he's on the doorstep. And then he's stealing it off your foot, Charlie, and putting it in the back. I love him.
So that's why
I love Sam Johnson.
Sam Johnson would not exist in the same locker room.
Charlie's going to two-foot him.
Late to meetings, first to put the ball in the back of the net, baby.
Nope.
Sam Johnson, he's my spirit animal, because we all know that Weeby time around here is... Weeby time, Sam, it's a very similar approach to life.
Respect to Krylak for handling that professionally.
Yeah.
He's like, oh, I got the assist.
Well, he almost got one later, but then it was offside, unfortunately, for him. But hey, you take the points. Steve Goff, I was saying, piqued my interest in the middle of the night from France, I guess. He says, as Chinese League's transfer window opens, Jensung Suni FC made a transfer offer of around $10 million to Toronto FC for Josie Altidore. The contract would pay him, around $25 million for 3 years.
Oh, my God.
He just signed an extension with Toronto FC. Just signed it. This year, he'll make 6.3 according to the MLS Players Union figures that are out there. You would think with the new extension, it probably goes down.
Mm-hmm.
You would think. That's a lot of money.
No, his extension went up.
Oh.
Yeah.
Poof. Josie. My man.
Josie's really, really good when he's healthy. But he's almost 30, and he's almost never healthy. If you're Toronto and Josie's willing to, you know, to pack up and move along, you got to consider this.
You would be basically getting out from under the DP spot in the contract in that case because of the amount of money they paid for him to get him there and then the wages and all that. I would think that the way allocation works, you wouldn't be able to pull any allocation out. I'm just basically guessing at that, but they had to pay a significant fee to get him from Sunderland in the first place, although it wasn't make weight with
Jermaine Defoe.
But the bloody big deal, wasn't it?
I mean, I don't know if he wants to live in China. I don't know if the $2 million a year difference between Toronto and Shanghai is... I mean, Shanghai, I've never been, but supposedly a gorgeous city.
Just got engaged?
Yeah.
Yeah?
Yep.
Just got... Seems to love life in Toronto.
Yeah, I say stay.
I don't think you're going anywhere, but it's nice to know that you wanted.
Yeah, wait. holler at me in a couple of years, China. Yeah. I think that'd be my
Where's our China? Where's our, like, you know, just doing
this
a decent
China.
Job here on Extra Time.
Is China.
Yeah, sure. The Cooligans, maybe? I don't know. Before we get out of here, Ryan...
I don't think they have that kind
Yeah,
of
they don't. They don't. We might talk a good game. Ryan from Juarez here. So here in Mexico, he says one of the major cell phone companies has a promotion offering to reimburse you for the purchase of their phone during the Gold Cup, but only if Mexico wins. Two questions. One, what's the estimation that would happen? And two, would you do it? Would you make that bet right now? Throw the phone out of it. Let's just say it's $1,000.
Mexico versus the field?
Yeah.
I'd probably lean in Mexico's direction at this point. They're not. It's not like 60-40. I feel like Bobby. I'm just
don't ask me that. Don't ask me that question because I'm nothing anti-Mexico.
Oh, yeah. Wow. Mm-mm. On the field, Charlie sees those green jerseys. He's like, no,
it's not happening. No. Nope.
All right, I respect that. I think I might go for it. Feed my family.
I'm sorry. I'm just reading this other comment. Warshaw is the only one who knows anything.
Yeah, this is from Noob on YouTube. This is how we'll end. Of course, you may have seen Bobby Warshaw's, his take about Christian Pulisic, which I think, you know, he clarified it. It's not about Christian shouldn't start or that he shouldn't guarantee to start. And by the way, Berhalter said that no player should be guaranteed to start. But Noob on YouTube said, Warshaw is the only one who knows anything. The other two, I'm guessing that's me and Dave, are a weak attempt at attracting the beer belly American football fan who doesn't know jack about soccer or being an athlete for that matter, but knows everything about soccer and being an athlete.
This is like a Warshaw KD burner account moment, I think.
I mean, it got me pretty good on that one. Anyway, we love reading your YouTube comments. Watch us there as well if you listen to the pod. Anywhere you can get it, iTunes, Spotify, et cetera, et cetera. Join us twice a week, Mondays and Thursdays. Getting out of here. We'll see you on Thursday. We're taping Wednesday night after that U.S. game, so get your mail in early this week. Extratime at MLSsoccer.com, 401-206-0MLS. For Matt Doyle, Kalen Carr, Charlie Davies, Chuck D, I'm Andrew Wiebe. We're out of here. Enjoy your week, everybody.